So I've always wanted to start a podcast by saying, I was just on John Haidt's Substack. Just because I'm not the kind of guy that you would think is on anybody's Substack. Until 3 months ago, I didn't know what a Substack was. But I was on John Haidt's Substack. I can't even say it right. I was on there, and I thought I was going to be reading an article about the way in which cell phones continue to cause anxiety and depression among our youth and are actually the greatest threat to mankind that we have. But instead, John Haidt was sharing an article about free play and how the loss of free play, the loss of children meeting up with their buddies outside the house in the afternoon or on a summer's day, hopping on their bikes and riding around the neighborhood, just making up their own games, fighting with each other, getting hurt, adjudicating conflicts, all the loss of free play over the last 50 years, which is not coincidentally since I was a child, has led to a bunch of really big problems, including young people that are, while technically brilliant and really good soccer players, because they play a lot of organized soccer, and excellent pianists too, because they take those lessons, but like are lousy at forming friendships and at adjudicating conflict and at managing relationships. And I was thinking like, now I know I have a strange sample, but I meet a lot of young people that struggle in those ways. And so I've been thinking a lot about childhood. You know, I'm also thinking about childhood because like I just came back from a vacation in which I didn't sleep in once and I read no books because there were these three small children there, my grandchildren, who I don't want to complain about, but like, let's call it family time and not a vacation, because if there are three little kids there, it's anything but. Anyway, so I'm thinking about childhood, and I thought it's a good thing I'm thinking about childhood. Thank you, John Haidt, because today I have to talk to John Wright.
Who is a big child.
That's right, you're here, and it's not just, the reason I'm excited is not just because you're a childlike elfin, some would say. But because we plotted this, we were like, a long time ago, we were like, we need to try to fix it. We had a conversation. When did we have that conversation?
I think May of 2020.
May of 2020.
Yeah. Episode 514. What are we to make of antinatalism?
Right. What a stupid conversation to have like 4 months into COVID, right?
We had to talk about something.
That was right before the podcast basically went belly up for like the next year because I was so completely listless. so, it, you know, anyway, seldom has there been an episode that was less prepared for.
In the wake of it, you kind of felt like you were unprepared.
A shot from the hip.
Shot from the hip. Gave your sort of just top of mind reaction to it.
On a subject that is actually really important to people that care about it on both sides.
Really pretty fraught. And we got some reaction to that, didn't we?
Oh my gosh. And that's like, and I think that's where we should start.
Like, yeah, I think we should too. So I have an old email that we got around the time that I want to read to you first, just to give you a flavor of the reaction and to remind you, Bart, of a painful memory. And then I want to update it with a new email that we just got that is about kind of the same subject-ish,
yeah.
But it's in a very sort of, here are the two positions that I'm considering and I don't know what to make of each. Are you down?
Yeah, it will be painful for me. I got a lot of painful emails on that subject. Yeah. And I ended up feeling like, A, I need to try to fix this, and B, I'm not prepared. And so I guess this whole episode's going to fall in the category of better late than never.
Yeah, and it's as good a time as any. So,
okay, so yeah. Go. Yeah.
So this is the original 2020 email. Hello, Bart and John. This week's episode left me upset, angry, and absolutely devastated. I was screaming at my car by the end of the episode. How can a man, he's talking about you here, Bart, who just absolutely oozes acceptance and positivity, say such ignorant and hurtful things? I find myself wondering if I can continue to listen. First off, the idea that all life forms are programmed to reproduce has been debunked. This is an old idea that reinforces hetero patriarchy. The most basic instinct of life forms could be better described as survival of the species, not propagate individual genes. This has been talked about openly in academic circles for decades. I just put animals that display homosexual behavior into my search bar, and guess what? Spoiler, you're wrong. Try it yourself. See what Wikipedia says. See what experts say about apes, dolphins, or penguins. Please do this and issue a retraction. You must have said something along the lines of all individuals in a species seek to reproduce or something similar.
Whatever I said, like, you know, he's right. Not everything reproduces. Some things like help the rest of its tribe reproduce. And there's like every species is gay. And that's as a feature.
Yeah. So going on from there, this idea that all life forms want to impregnate each other is very hurtful to people like my fiance and myself, people who have talked about adoption and realized that every child deserves love. I do think it is bad to have children, because it is. The world is already overpopulated with human beings. Are you worried about climate change? Having children is the worst thing you can do for the environment. Do you care about economic inequality or extreme poverty? FosterFocusMag.com reports 40 to 50% of people who age out of foster care become homeless within 18 months. For these considerations and more, my future wife and I have decided that having a baby would be bad because it would take away our ability to care for one more orphan who is already alive and statistically predisposed to have terrible lives. I happen to believe that all children should have good lives, not just ones that look like my wife. Plus, that's gross. Why do so many people want their kids to look like the people they're sexually attracted to? My ego does not dictate who is deserving of a safe and caring environment. I would have thought this was something that you would understand. I do not consider myself to be antinatalist because of bullies in the media. I've tried to adopt the title non-natalist, but no one wants to have a discussion about that. They just want to tell me how stupid I am. That's what you did. Well, fuck you. I do not want to think that I've been following a bigot these past 2 years. Today, I had to listen to some Creedence before walking in the door to avoid being rude or aggressive with my fiance. As we were talking about our days and decompressing, I started recounting some of the hurtful things you said and how you avoided any discussion of adoption. My fiance is pretty aware of what I listen to, who I'm influenced by, and who I look up to. While we were talking, she asked, "This isn't the guy with the son, right?" I became a huge fan of Romans after hearing Worst Things on the Selma Gundy episode. There's another old one for our listeners, Bart.
Yeah, yeah.
Her jaw dropped when I reaffirmed that, yes, that lovely, caring, and empathetic person and this dismissive one are one and the same. P.S. I'm sorry for being so aggressive, but I feel like it is warranted. So there we go. So that's letter number one.
Well, I mean, first of all, I got a number of those and I wrote back to all those people and like said, like, hey, you know, I don't necessarily agree with them, but like, I agree with a lot of what they're saying or some of what they're saying. And I certainly like, when you're talking about important stuff to people, you got to be careful. And I wasn't careful.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one is much shorter. This is our recent letter from a listener who kind of distills it down to just two positions that they can't agree on, which is right. Dear Bart, I have been wondering quite a bit recently, is it more good or more bad to have biological children? My wife and I want to be parents for sure. Adoption is an option we're also pursuing, but there are many practical challenges to that. By comparison, many couples come by biological children fairly easily, sometimes too easily. I have a general sense that biological children are good because human society depends on new people. Biological children can go forth and do good things, and biological children get to experience all of the good things in life. On the flip side, though, my biological children will be exposed to suffering despite my best efforts. They will degrade the environment in their fashion, and they could prevent slash distract me from doing good for other people. As someone who has been immersed in religious and humanist teaching, is there a secular stance on the goodness or badness of biological procreation that I'm missing? I'd love to learn about secular pronatalism, if it's a thing, to at least balance out all of the bleak antinatalist literature that I went through. So there's two letters. I like the difference. I like the fuck you in the first one. I thought it was kind of interesting. And I'm interested in where you are now on this part.
Well, I'll be interested in where you are too. I think that one of the interesting things is I feel like that second letter is sort of asking, is it good or bad to have children, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which could maybe be characterized as like, should we have children? If you can have children, should you? Mm-hmm. Or should you not? Right?
Yeah.
I feel like there's a should in there.
I think so too.
And I think that probably the thing after talking to people and reading some stuff and thinking a lot, as I go, like, I think that's the wrong question.
Mm.
And in a sense, I mean, I guess in certain circumstances, it might be the right question. But I think in general, the antinatalists say, you should not have children. It is irresponsible. Those children will suffer. It will degrade the environment. There are lots of children that nobody wants. You should take one of those. And the pronatalists say, be fruitful and multiply. And I think that the longer I think about this, the more I think, I was actually looking at a kind of what looked like an antinatalist website. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, we are not antinatalists. We are anti-pronatalists. And what they said was, there's a lot of pressure in this society on people, particularly on women, to feel like they should have children, that it is selfish not to have children. There's a lot of religious teaching.
Yes.
Says you should have children.
Yes.
There are some right-wing political voices that are like, white people, you should have children because everyone else is having children and we have to keep up. There are Palestinian voices that say, hey, we need to have a lot of children so that we can create a population imbalance and improve our political position. That there's all sorts of like political reasons, you know, and what these folks are saying, that I was looking at this kind of like what looked to me to be an antinatalist website,
mm-hmm.
is they were like, wait a second, we're not antinatalists. We're anti-pronatalism. We think that the real goal here should be reproductive autonomy. The people shouldn't be coerced into having children they don't want to have.
Right.
And I thought about that and I thought, yeah, I'm anti-pronatalism too. But you know what, John? I'm also anti-antinatalism. The idea of shaming people and saying, well, the environment, if you like, and look at all those adopted kids that are unadopted, it's your job to get that. You shouldn't have children. It's wrong. Like the guy who wrote the first email is like, it is wrong. And I'm like, it isn't wrong for everybody.
Like, so this is not going to engender you to him.
No. I'm anti-reproductive coercion.
So not just coercion, though, but also, do you want the culture to be neutral on the question too? In other words, like it shouldn't be encouraging or discouraging.
Here's the thing. You know who I think really shouldn't have children? Are people that don't want to have children.
Right.
Are otherwise ill-equipped to have children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people say, well, you know, if you don't have a child is the way that you will, you know, that will unlock the love. I feel a love for my children that I never felt before. And like, you'll become a more loving person if you have children. And like, I don't know how many stories we have to read about cold, cruel, uncaring mothers and fathers to recognize that just having a biological child does not guarantee that you will all of a sudden have a flood of love.
Right.
I know people like our friend in that first letter. Like, they look at all the foster kids that don't have homes.
I was just about to say, yeah, he has a lot of like objectively based arguments against what you're saying. And I want to kind of channel him here and put it to you. Like, what about the environment? Like, are you denying that what he says is true?
No, it's all true. It's all true. Like, honestly, if you really care about the environment, you should commit suicide today. You're using carbon, like you're taking up space. Maybe you should go out and kill some other people too. And maybe find the most least desirable and the most carbon unfriendly people and kill them.
I feel like we need a big disclaimer on this podcast now.
I'm joking.
You're using hyperbole.
Until you have a zero carbon footprint. Like, I go like, so you're not going to have children because the carbon? I go like, well, maybe you should reduce your carbon in other ways. Maybe you should stop driving a car. Until you're perfect on all of those things, don't tell me not to have a child.
Mm.
Okay. But the other thing is this, is like, he's right. It's environmentally negative. Does it also distract you from other kinds of love? It does. You know, people that have children, their activism goes way down. They don't have as much time left to like volunteer at the jail to do literacy programs. Kids are consuming. And so you go like, you could do more good in the world if you didn't have children. More good for who? More right. good for these people.
Less for the others. Yeah.
Right. So my point is like, I think he's right. Like, I think if you think that you should be spending your time tutoring people in prison or writing poetry or fighting for environmentalism, that's probably what you should do because that's what you think you should do. That's the good that you feel called to do or that you feel suited to do or that feeds your sense of meaning and purpose. Okay?
But wait, doesn't this make all of this very subjective then? Isn't it a denial of the objective realities?
Yes! Yes! That's exactly what I'm saying is, right. is that it is subjective. Because if you say to me, should I have, like, we're talking about having kids. Like, should you have sex? Should you go to an amusement park? Should you read a good novel? I go like, those are all subjective things. And you say like, for some people, riding a roller coaster would make them very happy. Other people, it would scare the heck out of them.
But it's either bad or good to recycle plastic. Like you think it's good. I happen to know that you recycle.
I don't recycle all the time.
Oh, okay.
I recycle when it's convenient. Every now and then I have a can of soda. I've got three kids I'm trying to wrangle somewhere and there's no recycling bin and there's a trash can over there.
That's the problem. The kids distracted you from recycling.
Right. And I just throw in the trash can and I don't feel any compunction about that because the fact of the matter is I'm really well aware that no matter how much you recycle, it's like a drop in the bucket compared to like one Walmart deciding to turn off its lights for 5 minutes.
Right, right.
So like I'm not under any illusion that my recycling ultimately is going to tip the scales.
You're practical about it.
It's a symbolic act. And sometimes it costs too much to do it in some other value I have.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, so in general, all things being equal, I will recycle, but all things are very seldom equal.
Right.
What I'm saying is that the question is, why do we do anything? Okay. Why live? And Ingersoll, you knew I would get to him. Ingersoll's most famous quote is, reason, science, experimentation, all these have taught us one simple thing, that the only good is happiness. And the time to be happy is now, and the place to be happy is here, and the mm-hmm. way to be happy is by making other people so. But he was like, look, let's not kid ourselves. All of this is about trying to be happy. Now, when he said happy, he meant something much broader than just like shits and giggles. Mm-hmm. He meant flourishing. He meant like meaning and growth and goodness and all of these things.
There's a depth to it, not just hedonism. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But or true hedonism says you don't just want to be giggling, you also want to feel connected. You also want to feel a sense of meaning.
Yeah.
You also want to be good at something and have a sense of accomplishment. But like all those things that like at the end of their lives, people add up and sort of go like, this is what makes for a sense of satisfaction. I think satisfaction might be a really good word, or fulfillment.
Yeah. Like, fulfillment I like. Yeah.
With the resources I had, I squeezed the most out of them. I got the most good out of them that I could.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that's why we do things. And so the real question is, not should people have children, but like, why do they want to have children? Or why do some people want to have children? And why do some people not? I used to think that happiness or fulfillment or all that stuff, you know, in my kind of fundamentalist mindset, I thought that was a one-size-fits-all thing. Like it comes from like serving Jesus or being a part of a community or, you know, if there's anything I've learned over the last 10 years, it's that different people thrive different ways. And there are some people for whom having children is very fulfilling and is very creative and very humanizing. Mm-hmm. And there are other people for whom it is unremitting suffering And it brings them no joy, and they bring no joy to the children that they have. And so to say, like, should a person have children? I go, like, who are we talking about? Who are we talking about? Or should a person adopt? Again, who are we talking about? Because, you know, it's funny, our friend sort of has that throwaway line, like, gross. Why does anybody can only love a child that looks like them and their partner? And I'm like, that's like a bunch of biology. It's not just like, it's not just the look, it's the smell, it's the way they move, it's the way they think. Like, yeah, that's part of it. And that's why some people want to have children. And that's
right.
Why some people
I think there's
good.
a little inconsistency there I see in the argument that he makes, because I think, like, on one level he's appealing to what biology does, you know, what species do. And then on the other level, he's saying, like, I don't like this part of what this species does.
Because that's the biological imperative, right?
Yes, yes. So I get what you're saying there, but you're still using the metric of thriving, fulfillment, meaning, joy, individual. But I sort of feel like his argument is more about the world in general. What's good for the world in general?
First of all, like, and you can go to China and anyone will tell you, like, you know what? We need to have more children here. Like, our economy is going to collapse and the old people have no one to take care of them. Like, our species needs to produce children.
You're saying there's stuff on both sides of that ledger.
Yeah. Our species needs to produce children. And the question is, who should be producing them? And I would suggest to you that one measure of who should be producing them is the people that want to, the people that are driven to. The people that find fulfillment.
But first of all, though, that's a premise that you just said.
Yes.
That we need to reproduce, that I think this guy might have an issue with, because he says we're overpopulated. The environment is suffering because of it. Do you accept that we're overpopulated or no?
Our population is, evidently we're in a shrinking time right now in certain places. The other thing is, like, there's no, you know, how many people our planet, yay, our solar system, yay, our universe can sustain is an open question. Like,
I agree with that.
And we've been told many times in the past that there were too many. And then, like, we figured out how to grow more food, or we figured out how to live more compactly.
No, I agree. I agree.
So I just want to sort of pull it into this idea of having children. If somebody would go with me and say, like, well, what's the point of life? What's the point of human life? And I would go, like, you know, in the end, I'm with Ingersoll. I think, like, essentially we're here to flourish by helping others flourish. Like, it's about contributing to, like, we flourish by helping others flourish. Like, the question is not, should you be helping others flourish in order that you too may enjoy and get the most out of your life? Like, all these adopted children, presumably he wants them to have good lives. I do too. I want him to have a good life.
Yeah.
I want that lady who really wants to have children to have a good life. I want that guy who's always dreamed of being a father to have a good life. What different people need to have a good life is different. I want everybody to have a good life. And for some of those people, that's going to involve having children.
Okay, so let's go to that then. In our second letter, there was the mention of this idea of suffering. So when you bring a child into the world, yes, they're capable of flourishing, they're capable of joy, they're capable of happiness, but you're also going to see them suffer. And unfortunately, there can be some amount, I'm sure you wouldn't disagree with this, there can be some amount of rolling of the dice there as far as outcomes. Yes, you can try to front load, you can try to do as much as you can to ensure good outcomes, but it's not a guarantee, and some people will suffer more than they will have joy. Some amount will suffer a lot, right? And so the question is, like, if what we care about ultimately is fulfillment and joy, is that a good argument to have a kid?
Is that a good risk?
Is it a good risk? Does the risk reward work out in favor of having kids, if you look at only that metric?
Well, and I think one of the questions you'd have to ask is, you know, the person who's deciding to have children, in most cases, is going to have a lot to say about whether or not that child is going to experience joy, especially in the early part of their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and them up to have the most amount of joy later.
But the other thing is, like, I don't even have just a selfish, like, we have children so that they can be happy, because that's not why That's not the only reason people have children. As a matter of fact, few people have children for the sake of the children because the children don't exist when they have the children. People have children for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. I said, one reason people have children is because they want to have a family. You know, they want to have a multi-generational family. They want to create like a team. And they're aware of the fact that there's a quality to a biological team, family, that, you know, you go like, well, you have your chosen family, all your friends and stuff. Like, pay attention to how chosen families, how long they endure, and how they weather economic and personal crises and conflicts, and then stack that up against biological families, and I think you'll see it's like a really different matrix.
It is.
You know? And so some people, they're like, I want to have a family. Some people want to have that family.
So when you say, sorry, you threw me off whenever you said, I want, because that makes it sound like, oh, well, I just want candy and I want this and I want that. And it sounds selfish. But what you're saying is actually, even when you think about it rationally, there are arguments for wanting that.
Yeah. This is not a casual one. This would be part of the biological imperative that some people feel. That's why I want to say to that first guy, some people. I said all, go take me out back and flog me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But you were wrong in that. Yeah.
I was wrong if I said that. Yeah. That sounds like a cheap apology. Like, if I hurt your feelings, I'm sorry. Like, okay. I'm pretty sure I was wrong.
I just want to say, I had visions of this being a very kumbaya thing, and I don't think that this gentleman is going to be feeling that way.
No, he's not going to write back to me, so no. You are still my favorite person.
I thought he was going to still
maybe,
like...
Maybe he will, you know?
Yeah.
Some people have that deep desire for a family because they don't feel safe in the world because they don't come from a family that's coherent and mm-hmm. that's caring. And so, like, I want to build one. Because I don't have one. I feel adrift in the world. I want to build a family. Some people want to build that family for just the opposite reason. They grew up in that kind of family and they love it and they want it to go on. They want to create the thing that somebody else created for them and that gave them such safety and security. They want to create that for somebody else. And maybe they came from a family that some of the siblings went off and fought environmental stuff and didn't have any kids. And maybe some of the siblings went off and adopted kids. And they're like, that's great. I want to build one so those adopted kids had some friends to play with. Or I want to build one so that single sibling of mine has nephews and nieces to you know. And it's not just a gift to the children or a gift to themselves. It's a gift to their tribe. My kids had kids. It was a gift to me. Mm-hmm. Grandparenting is a whole different experience, a whole different part of the human experience. And like, again, like not everybody wants or needs that experience, but for my kids, they were pretty aware, like my folks would love this. Mm-hmm. And you go like, mm-hmm. oh, so that was a gift of love, not just to their children, but to me.
Okay, so even if someone listening doesn't think this overrides their concerns about the environment or their concerns about this or this and that, at the very least, they have to give you that this is in the pro column.
Right.
Right. Having people to look after each other when life gets hard, wanting that family for good, for reasons that are objectively pretty good.
Sure. And let's just say even you're a rabid environmentalist, mm-hmm. But you're not really that good at making speeches and you're not really that good at writing letters, but like you're really good at nurturing children. I don't know. You might want to have some kids and raise them within your environmental values. Maybe some of them will be good writers and good protesters and good activists and good politicians. You might actually promote your values most effectively.
By having a family.
By having a family. I'll give you another one. You go like, why do I want to protect the environment anyway? Why do I want to raise those adopted kids anyway? And you go like, I want them to have meaningful lives. And I go like, yeah.
Well, that speaks to ultimate values.
We value meaning. And meaning is, you said subjective, meaning gets created when we care about something or care about someone. So you go like, I want to have children because I want to increase the amount of meaning in the universe. If I create a child, I will care about that child. I suspect that child will care about me. The sum total of meaning on the like goes up. And so you go like, well, what about the environmental cost? I go like, what about the meaning cost? What about the meaning benefit? Mm-hmm. the idea of mutual care and significance, you know, the idea that you can create significance. There was nothing that I cared about in that space. And now there is something that I care about very deeply. This sum total of meaning in the universe, this thing that we all think is important, goes up.
Yes. So what I see you there is climbing a ladder towards some sort of ultimate value that says, like, human beings, you know, create meaning, human beings create value. And I think that there's an alternate ladder going on here where someone's ultimate value may be something more like the balance of an ecosystem, whether we're there or not.
Bless their heart. I'm just saying that that even when you judge an ecosystem to be beautiful, who's judging it to be beautiful?
Yeah, there needs to be human beings to do that.
It's a subjective judgment that can only be made by somebody who's capable of making, like, you need sentience in order,
sentience. That's what I should have said. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And you may devalue human sentience because, like, you've had bad experiences with it. But the truth of the matter is there are other people that have had good experiences with it. Mm-hmm. And that may be part of why they want to reproduce. And that may be part of why they see children as a value.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
And so, all I'm saying is that there are people for whom having children will humanize them, will enable them to make the most of their life. And you might go, like, well, who the heck cares about that? And I go, like, everybody, including the person who says, I will get more meaning out of not having children and saving the planet, or out of not having children and sacrificing myself for this cause or for this other person. I go, like, that's still a form of sort of even altruism. At the root of it, there's a kind of a fulfillment issue, like where I get fulfilled by sacrifice or I get fulfilled by giving. You go, like, well, what I really want is a pure motive. And I go, like, yeah, you keep looking for it because there's no pure motive.
Right.
Everybody's altruism is tinged with a little bit of, like, it feels good to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm suggesting is, like, there's a reason why people want to have children. Sometimes they can't articulate it. Sometimes it's not logical. Sometimes it's just a biological imperative where they just go, like, at a certain age, they're like, I really want to have kids.
The not universal, but common biological imperative.
Yeah. And I just think that we should not coerce anybody or pressure anybody or make anybody feel like they should want to have kids. But if somebody does want to have kids, especially for reasons that are, if you want to have kids so that you can sell their organs to buy more heroin, yeah, I've got a problem with you. But, like, when you sort of look at somebody and say, like, why do you want to have kids? And they say, well, here are the reasons. I think we need to stand back and say, okay, then I support you. And then somebody else says, I don't want to have kids because these things worry me, or I'm anxious about this, or I feel like this is more important to me than that. We should go, like, all right, that's not selfish. That's not uncaring. Like, there are lots of things to love besides children, and we should support that.
Let me ask you a question then.
Yeah.
Do you have any sort of internal judgment of people like, say, the Duggar family who had, I don't know how many, I think it was John and Kate plus eight at one point, or is that someone else?
No, that was the Goslins. That was
Oh, the Goslins. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are different things, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But all these giant families, do you have any thought on that? Like, is there anything like, oh, that's too much, like that? Self-indulgent.
I my gut does. But then, like, I gotta tell you, like, I got this niece, and she and her husband, they got, like, I think they got eight now, maybe nine.
Wow.
That's a massive family. And they're out in Minnesota. Their kids show up literally in a 12-passenger van. And their kids are beautiful. And they're kind to each other. And they're raising each other. And these two parents they're amazing. Like, if I had eight kids, it would be irresponsible.
Right. What about someone who are child-free / childless, whatever way you want to put it, and choose not to at all? Do you have any judgment there?
No, not at all. Like, again, like, I'm anti-antinatalism. I'm anti-pronatalism.
Okay.
Because the truth is, like, I want them to be fulfilled. And somebody said, well, they would be more fulfilled. No, no, you would be more fulfilled. You don't know what would be more fulfilling to them. And you don't know how good a parent they would be. And you don't know. Just accept that you don't know. Like, it's a really important thing to just step back and say, maybe I should be figuring out how to make the most of my life. And you go like, but you've already said that that has to do with contributing to the well-being of others. And I go like, yeah. And what's your best strategy for contributing to the well-being of others? You know, almost all of the things that have deeply and profoundly improved the human condition. It's funny. I watched Oppenheimer the other day, and I wouldn't say that the atomic bomb necessarily improved the human condition, although all the people that would have died in the invasion of Japan might think otherwise. But certainly there's certain scientific discoveries that have markedly shaped humanity or the lives of many people for the better. There's art that has been created that has inspired many people, Mozart and whatnot. Almost all of the things that make a significant improvement in the human condition required levels of personal sacrifice that precluded somebody from being a great parent. There's some endeavors that just are so consuming that, like, are you glad that some people don't have children so that they can do those things? And I'm like, I am. The ones that try to do both, a lot of times, like, everybody lauds the great stuff they did and their kids are full of resentment for them because they just weren't there. They weren't present. They might be proud of them, but they do not feel connected to them. And you know, the list of people who have famous parents or accomplished parents who are resentful of them is long and star-studded. And so, like, I would submit to you that there are some people, like, I think it's really a good question to go like, hey, what's my best way of making meaning? What's my best way of fulfilling my humanity? What do I think is the best way that I can be happy myself and contribute to the happiness of others? And for some people, that's going to inevitably involve creating a family. And for other people, it's not. And I just really want to be supportive of people on both sides of that.
Yeah.
And I think that the impulses of the antinatalist movement, their fears about the environment and the economic consequences and the suffering that people, look, those are well-founded fears. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that they are not stupid or wrong or out there. I think, like, if somebody goes like, you know, I just don't, you know, a lot of people, their own personal experience of this life makes them think like, I don't want to pass on all the neuroses I've got.
Or their experience of family.
My experience of family. I just don't, you know, and I just go like, you know what? I want to support those people.
Right.
And say like, great, come over. If you want to play with kids at all, come play with my kids. If you can't stand children, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. There might be other things that you're capable of loving because you're not distracted by children in any way, shape, or form. And I go like, okay. I'm interested in what is fulfilling to you. I'm interested in what makes you tick, but I don't want to judge it. And at the same time, there are people that want to have 10 kids. And they go like, I don't care about making a difference politically. I don't care about creating something. I don't have a great need for self-expression. This is my project. And I actually think that by putting 10 really kind and loving people into the world, that is a and I go like, you know what? Okay. I want to support that too. And so, like, I think this is a very personal decision, duh. But I think that a lot of times we talk about it as if there is a right one size fits all answer to the question, is it good to have children or is it bad to have children? And I think the answer is like, let's talk about who you are. Let's talk about what you would have to give up. Let's talk about what you could accomplish otherwise. Let's talk about what will make you at the end of your life feel that it was worth the trouble. Because if there's one thing we know about this life, is that it's full of trouble.
Now, we've been talking about having biological children. One of the big sort of bugs in that first letter was that we avoided talking about, that was his word, avoided talking about adoption.
He's astute on that point.
Why did we avoid it if we did? And why have we avoided it today?
I don't know about you. I know why I avoid a conversation about adoption, because I've been around a lot of adoption and I love adoption and I fear adoption. And I've seen people be really blessed and helped by adoption. And I've seen people's lives be, and their marriages be destroyed by adoptions. Adoption is not as simple as people make it out to be. And that doesn't mean it's not as important as people make it out to be.
Very important, but a hard path, or potentially hard path?
In many cases. You know, and you go like, well, are the odds of you having insight into how to raise a child increased if that child is your biological child? And I go like, yeah, manifestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really believe that. Does that mean that adoption may not, for some people, be an even more fulfilling option? Nope. Nope. I know some unbelievably great adoption stories firsthand. You know, I'm connected to people who have had beautiful adoption stories. But I have seen, particularly when we get into these cross-cultural adoptions, I've seen a lot of hardship. And sometimes even when there's all this hardship, it's still better for the kid than if they hadn't adopted at all, if they hadn't been adopted. Mm-hmm. Even though they don't end up with this tight connection, you know, this deep understanding. But I've also seen sometimes where it's better for the kid, but it's not necessarily always better for the parents. Mm-hmm. They were promised that if they did the things that, if they treated this child as if this as their own, that they would end up with the same kind of bond that they would have expected of having their own child. And the bond doesn't emerge that way. The reason I avoided it is a reason I don't want to talk much about it. It's the same thing about the antinatalism thing. I hadn't thought about it enough to talk openly about it. And it's really important to people. And maybe we should someday do a show about adoption as a way of humanizing ourselves and be more understanding the costs and benefits of it. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is this is, I know for a fact that there are people for whom adoption, parents for whom adoption was the best gamble they could have made. Like, whether it worked out or not, that was a good choice on their part. Like, you can make a good choice to have children and it might not turn out well.
Right.
Like, these are all guesses, right? Mm-hmm. These are all educated guesses. But what I'm saying is, like, clearly, like the guy who wrote in there, I go like, it sounds like he and his wife really should adopt, and I'll bet they'll be brilliant at it. Mm-hmm. He seems so committed to it. And then there are other people for whom having biological kids, for all sorts of reasons, is the better choice for them. You know, again, like, we need children. If you believe that life is valuable and you want it to go forward, somebody's got to have some kids. Like, in general, I believe in reproduction. Like for the species.
I believe it happens. I believe that it exists. Yeah.
And I'm a fan. Right. It happens and I'm a fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I am trying to outgrow is the notion that there is one best path to human fulfillment and to righteousness, to which we all should try. We're all trying to figure out what's that one path. I am convinced that it is nuanced person to person and situation to situation. And I want to ask good questions, and then I want to respect other people's answers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you had a message to that first question asker from 2020, who asks, you know, have I been following a bigot unknowingly? What would you say?
What I would say is, like, I hope that by the end of this show, he goes like, that guy's not against me. That guy doesn't think I'm stupid. He doesn't think I'm wrong for instinctually not wanting to have children. He doesn't think I'm wrong. I don't. And he doesn't judge me. And so I hope that he would feel a sense that he was included in that broad category of people that are really thinking about how to make the most of their lives. And that he would go like, yeah, we're on the same team. Bart's trying to figure out how to make the most of his life. And I'm trying to figure out how to make the most of my life. And we're both trying to like study and learn from people and listen to people. We're trying to figure this out. And like, maybe his path isn't my path, but maybe I should celebrate it. Maybe his path is a good path for him.
He already said he likes your son. So I think that's quite interesting.
I didn't even think of the irony of that. Yeah. Yeah. And I like my son. I tell you what, he'd like my grandson too. You know, both of them. So I hope that, you know, and what's funny is I still have his email address. And so if he hasn't changed, he may have stopped listening to the program, you know, mm-hmm. right after that episode, but I'll reach out to him. I'll say, hey, I want you to listen to this episode. And I want to know how it sits with you. And that second person, I want to send it to them too and say like, hey, does this help you at all? Because, and you go like, well, you didn't answer the question. You know, you didn't say whether it was good or bad. Like, yeah. But did it help you ask some questions mm-hmm. that I think should be asked?
On the question of specifically whether there is a secular pronatalist position, it's just an individual one for you.
Well, like I'm sure there is a secular pronatalist position out there. I can't articulate it. The only thing I can articulate is a secular invitation or a secular acceptance that says, you want to have kids and you're going to love them and you're going to raise them in such a way that they are an asset to the people that know them. Yeah, I'm all for you. Mm-hmm. In a sense, I think sometimes we are looking to each other and we're going like, do you think this is okay? Mm-hmm. And I go like, yeah. And the guy standing next to him says, I can't in good conscience have a child. There's so much suffering in the world. I go, like, you know what? You probably couldn't. I'll tell you a story, John. Mm-hmm. There's an old fable of a guy. There were these two cities, one in the east and one in the west. And there was a guy sitting on the road in the middle. Have I told you this one before? Mm-mm. Yeah. So these people come from the city in the east and they're headed to the city in the west. They've got all their belongings. They're moving. And they come to this guy standing in the middle of the road. And he says, hey, so where are you going? They're going, oh, we're going to the city in the west. And they say, have you ever been there? What's it like? He says, yeah, I've been there. He says, tell me about that city in the east you're coming from. They go like, oh, they go like, it's a horrible place. Everybody lies, cheats, and steals. You can't trust anybody there. And they're not very nice. He shakes his head. He says, oh, he said, I've got bad news for you. He said, I think you're going to find exactly the same thing when you get to the city in the west. And they go off down the road downhearted. A few minutes later, people coming from the west with all their stuff, they're moving to the city in the east. They stop this guy. He says, where are you going? He said, oh, we're moving to the city in the east. And they say, have you been there? What's it like? And he says, yeah, I've been there. He says, tell me about the city you're just coming from. Like, oh, back there in the west? He says, it's beautiful. People can't do enough for you. Everybody's neighborly. There's a lot of friendship and community. It's a beautiful place. Some different, you know. And he smiles. He says, oh, he said, I've got such great news for you. He said, that's it in the east. You're going to find exactly, it's the same way. It's exactly the same. the idea of like what we bring to the decision influences the outcome of the decision mm-hmm. every bit as much as the raw circumstances that we walk into.
Yeah.
And so, I think that there's a sense in which we need to pay, you know, there are people who, by the way that they think and feel and act about children and about family and about stuff like that, we sort of go like, you know what? You probably ought to have a family. It'd probably be a pretty good family. And then there are other people that we go like, you know, I really support your decision not to have kids. Like that's, you know, like beautiful person. And I think you can do a lot of other things. Maybe that's not your move.
Right.
So there's no one answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I accept that answer. I think that's a good one. And I think it's a really interesting subject. I'm sure it's not the last it'll come up on the podcast.
I enjoyed thinking about it. I really did. I'm grateful to these folks who wrote in. I really enjoyed thinking about it. I probably talked too long, but like I really enjoyed thinking about it because it's an opportunity for me to continue to try to dismantle the tendency and to judgmentalism and fundamentalism that is so deep in my bones, so core to my personality that it'll be a lifelong process just to whittle it down even to something manageable.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, Bart.
Thank you, John. Thanks to anybody that's listened to the podcast. You're all beautiful, and I'll see you next time on Humanize Me.
This podcast is made possible by supporters of the show on Patreon. Get an exclusive extra episode every month for less than the cost of a cup of coffee at patreon.com/humanizeme. You'll also get a video newsletter from Bart and some extra goodies. Our patrons make this show happen, so please, if you enjoy it, consider joining us. That's patreon.com/humanizeme. Bart's website, where you can contact him, is bartcampolo.org. And this episode is produced by Katie Johnson-Smith, me, John Wright, and Bart Campolo. Hey, you could be larger than